Bleeding Heart Square, written by Andrew Taylor and read by John Banks.
Don't go overnight into Bleeding Heart Square. It's a dark, little, dirty, black, ill-looking yard with queer people about. Extracted with modest modifications from The Housewarming, a legend of Bleeding Heart Yard. The Reverend Richard Harris Barham, The Inglesby Legends, or Mirth and Marvels, 3rd Series, 1847. Chapter 1. Sometimes you frighten yourself. So what is it, exactly? A punishment? A distraction? A relief? You're not sure. You tell yourself that it happened more than 4 years ago, that it doesn't matter anymore, and nothing you can do can change a thing. But you don't listen, do you? All you do is go back to that nasty little green book. Thursday, 2nd of January, 1930. Tomorrow, I shall go to Bleeding Heart Square for the first time. It was young Mr. Auburn's idea. I always think of him as young Mr. Auburn, though he must be 35 or 40 if he's a day. He is young compared with his father, who used to call at my aunt's, and she would give him Madeira and seed cake. All those years ago, how time flies. This is my first entry in the diary, and I feel rather awkward, as though I were talking to someone I'd only just met. My niece gave me the diary when I spent Christmas Day with my brother and his family. I suppose it was kind of them to ask me, and it was certainly better than having to eat my Christmas dinner at the Rushmere Hotel with the other residents, who don't have a family to ask them elsewhere. All the same, it was a little awkward. Anyway, this is the beginning of a new year, and I'm going to put my best foot forward. I've made several resolutions. I shall be cheerful. I shall think of others less fortunate than myself and try to help them. I shall reread every book in the New Testament and make notes as I go. I shall keep this diary. I shall record in it interesting impressions, conversations, thoughts, etc. that come my way. I need to keep active because we all know who finds work for idle hands. So, back to Bleeding Heart Square. It's such a strange name. I asked Mr. Auburn where it came from, but he didn't know. Memo to myself. Find out what the name means. It's as if you hear her talking, as if she's standing at your shoulder. When it's really bad, you imagine you smell her perfume. You think her thoughts. You dream her dreams. Now there's a thought. Miss Philippa May Penhow is not dead, only sleeping. At 3:10 on Tuesday, the 6th of November, 1934, Lydia Langston fumbled in her handbag for the latchkey. The house loomed over her like a dirty wedding cake. A cold wind flecked with rain nipped at her ankles. In her haste, she dropped the key and found herself laughing with a sort of idiot joy as she stooped to pick it up. Leaves shuffled along the pavement. The taxi pulled away from the curb, and she glanced over her shoulder at the sound of its engine. The front door was several feet above the level of the pavement and framed by a pair of white pillars. But this, she thought, will make everything all right. Now, at last. The key turned in the lock. She pushed open the door. The house was silent, wrapped in the calm that descended on it between lunch and tea, when, for an hour or two, the servants became invisible, wrapped in the mystery of their own lives. Marcus's hat lay on the polished chest at the foot of the stairs. For once, she was pleased to see it. He had been lunching at his club and had said nothing about when he would return. She registered the presence of a second hat, one she did not recognize, but failed in her absorption to draw the obvious conclusion that its owner must be in the house too. Marcus would be upstairs in his study or the drawing room. Still in her hat and coat, Lydia went in search of him. She ran up the stairs, which were far too large and imposing for the hall below and the landing above. It was that sort of house. It strove to impress and succeeded in sacrificing comfort and convenience.